In the last week, West Virginia public school teachers have made national headlines by going on strike to protest meager wage increases and rising health care costs. Every county in West Virginia has agreed to the strike, and while earlier last week it seemed that the strike was over and negotiations had begun, things quickly changed. As of this morning, all of West Virginia's public school teachers are still on strike. With us now to discuss the details of the teachers' demands and the implications of the strike for unionized labor across the country are Jake Zuckerman, a staff writer at the Charleston Gazette-Mail, and Sarah Jones, staff writer at the New Republic. They have both been following the strikes, and their recent articles about it include Zuckerman's piece, West Virginia Senate House at Odds Over Pay Raise Bill, Teacher Strike to Continue, and Jones's The West Virginia Teacher Strike Takes Aim at Coal and Gas. I am very pleased that their work brings both of them to the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so, thanks for having the fun.
Jake, I might start with you. Do you have, since this is very much a story in flux, do you have any hot off the press updates for us?
Yeah, well, I guess the newest news over here is that the House and Senate are going to meet at 4 p.m. today. Three members of each chamber are going to be meeting to find a way to either mitigate the difference or give it their best between the Senate's version of a 4% pay raise bill for teachers and school service personnel and the House's version of a 5% raise.
And so for our listeners, tell us what, because I think this is absolutely an essential story and definitely the most underreported domestic story of late. Tell us what the teachers' demands are.
Right. Well, that's also been in a state of flux. But the general consensus is that the teachers want a pay raise. They haven't gotten one since, I believe, 2014. And then there's also been a demand for a structural fix to the public employees' health program. Right now, the best the governor has done on the latter front is to issue an executive order creating a task force to investigate and find ways to keep premiums down and keep benefits up. Meanwhile, the legislature is trying to give them a pay raise in some form. They've already passed into law a plan that will give a 2% raise this year and a 1% raise over each of the next 2 years. But that was not enough to end the strike, and the teachers are trying to hit a 5% raise number, which would be 5% flat in the first year, and that's where we're at our current impasse.
And Sarah, what is a PEIA? You know, one of your pieces last week, you actually quoted a Gazette Mail article written by Jake's colleague, Phil Kabler, which explained the wellness program that the PEIA introduced recently. What are the wellness program requirements?
Right. So the PEIA was the Public Employee Insurance Agency, and that's the insurance plan that's supposed to cover all public employees and their dependents in the state. As I understand it, the wellness program, it's not dissimilar from similar programs that have been introduced in other private health insurance plans, where beneficiaries are expected to meet certain health benchmarks, and if they don't do so, they can be penalized. So the teachers that I've been talking to for my own work, they had longstanding grievances, but this just kind of added insult to injury for a lot of them.
Yeah, I should say. Jake, you reported yesterday, or recently rather, that the strike will continue indefinitely. What are the reactions from parents and students? Obviously, this is throwing the whole state into chaos.
Right. Well, I haven't been hearing from very many students in my time here, but I know the teachers are absolutely behind it. Everyone I've talked to is ready. You know, they think 5% is a modest enough ask that they're going to hold out for it. They're not going to go back in for 4%. And yeah, as far as the students, you know, part of the concern here has been a lot of students rely on schools to actually for feed, for nourishment, etc. So right now, a lot of the teachers have been doing a lot of behind the scenes work, making sure their students are actually fed and can continue to eat even when schools are not in session.
Yeah, I can only begin to imagine all the concentric circles of considerations that are generated with parents and work schedules and childcare and all of those issues. You wrote that on Saturday the 5% increase was actually passed mistakenly and then reduced to 4%. What happened there over the weekend?
That's correct. There was something of a blunder. We still haven't gotten a total backstory on what happened there, but to make a long story short, the Senate Finance Committee took the House's version of the 5% raise and amended it into a 4% version. But that agreement had to be amended into the bill on the full Senate floor. And somehow the Senate wound up mistakenly voting on the 5% version while discussing and debating the 4% version. And so the Senate actually passed the wrong bill, which was then sent over to the House clerk's office, but never made it to the House floor, at which point it was worked back to the Senate. The Senate had to undo, or make certain procedural votes to undo some of that action and then work forward on the correct bill. And there has been some argument from Senate Democrats that the Senate actually acted improperly and required two-thirds of a vote to do what they did, which is a threshold they don't have. And that's still an issue that's ongoing. Just yesterday, Dale Lee, who represents the West Virginia Education Association, said that his union is still considering legal action. Senator John Unger, the Democrat from Berkeley, threatened as much on the Senate floor just about 20 minutes ago. So it's a situation very much in flux, but
remarkable
changes are still playing out.
So, Jake, how many teachers' unions are there in West Virginia?
Well, there are three major unions. It's important to remember it's not just the teachers that are on strike. It's the school service personnel as well, which are the cooks at the schools and the bus drivers. But there have been three unions at the middle of all this. There's been the West Virginia Education Association, the American Federation of Teachers, and the West Virginia School Service Personnel Association.
And didn't this strike initially start in a couple of counties?
Yeah, so at first, before the statewide strikes were declared, I think it got as high as 11 counties that were all striking at the county level and coming to the Capitol and getting their voices heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that has since escalated to all 55 West Virginia counties.
So how was the consensus reached across the state to go on with the strike?
Well, at first, it was unions at the center of it, and it was the unions taking votes from the county members to have a strike, but at a certain point, when the governor first announced his plan to give teachers and school service personnel a 5% raise, the unions actually agreed to that, though originally the teachers did not. So what we saw was something of a decentralized, non-union-based strike, although at this point the unions and the teachers are back in sync, and they're holding out, and it seems like the 5% number would be enough to get the teachers back in school.
Got it. You know, aside from the protesters' financial demands, Sarah, your article included a photo of a digital flyer which also lists this particular demand, stop lowering teacher qualifications, which I think is highly interesting. Can you walk us through what that means and why it hurts both students and teachers?
So what I've heard is that there basically aren't enough certified teachers in certain subjects in the state. I don't consider myself quite an expert on that, but I know a particular area of concern was the lack of certified math teachers, so it's possible for a child in public school in West Virginia to go through several grades, I was told, without ever having a class with a certified math teacher.
Wow.
And the general perception among the teachers that I've talked to is that the state would have an easier time attracting and retaining certified teachers if teacher pay was more in sync with other states.
Jake, what does it mean? You know, it's sort of the heart of this is the fact that West Virginia is a right-to-work state. Tell our listeners what exactly a right-to-work state is, and does being a right-to-work state make the strike illegal?
Well, as far as the legality of the strike, there's only case law that really says whether it's legal or not. Our attorney general released a statement calling it unlawful, which appears to have been a carefully worded statement in that there's nothing in West Virginia code that says it's illegal to strike, but case law holds from our state Supreme Court back in the 1990s, the last time there was a statewide strike, that it is unlawful for teachers and for public employees to go on strike. I don't know that right to work really plays into the issue necessarily.
Okay. Sarah, can you explain how the current Supreme Court case, Janus versus AFSCME, relates to the question of being a right to work state?
Right. So with the caveat that I'm not an attorney, as I understand it,
it
would weaken the power of teachers' unions. So people wouldn't be obligated to pay dues to support their union. So there are a lot of concerns that, you know, it wouldn't make states a right-to-work state, but it would weaken the power of the union overall.
And you write that the state government could issue injunctions to force teachers to go back to work. What is the injunction process?
So what I was told, I interviewed a law professor at West Virginia University, and what she told me is that the state would have to go county by county, so that's obviously kind of a significant undertaking. And then that they would have to argue before the Supreme Court, that the state Supreme Court, that that the strike endangered a child's right to an education more than underfunding the public education system.
Is anyone currently, as far as you know, advocating or threatening to go down this road?
There was talk of it, but I haven't heard anything since then. And, you know, at the time, the teachers that I talked to said that those threats were really backfiring and it just made them more eager to stay out of work.
Mm-hmm. Jake, what's this? What has the state government's response been to the strikes? I mean, you've talked about that at length, but maybe perhaps Democratic lawmakers, are they supporting the strike?
I think more than anything, you know, I think there's unanimous consent that everyone really wants the strike to end and teachers to go back to school. The question is how to accomplish that. Most Democratic lawmakers, aside from pushing for the 5%, are trying to speed this process up. They've accused some Republicans of dragging their feet a little bit. For instance, it was Saturday night that the two chambers couldn't find an agreement between 4 and 5%. They appointed the conference committee. That conference committee did not meet Sunday. It did not meet this morning. And it won't even meet until 4 p.m., which would make it at least unlikely for the strike to be able to end tomorrow. So I think one big pressure point is the difference between trying to slow this down and make it a deliberative process versus working as fast as possible to find a way to end the strike as soon as possible.
And where does Governor Jim Justice stand on the issue?
Well, that's a tough one to pin down.
Yeah.
You know, he did sign into law this 2-1-1 pay raise plan, so that's 4% over 3 years. And that wasn't enough to prevent the strike, as it turned out. And since then, his administration released new revenue estimates, which bolster the state's ability to actually pay for the 5% plan. Now, some are pretty suspect of those new revenue estimates under the guise that, you know, if something seems too true, too good to be true, it might just be so. But, you know, we don't see him a lot at the Capitol last year. And in the past, he used to be this presence that you saw all the time, and he'd hold press conferences. He'd be involved in negotiations. And he's been somewhat of an absentee governor through all this. He's infrequently here. It's big news anytime there's a sighting of the governor here. So he's a tough one to pin down at this point. But he's been still pushing through press statements and general social media for the 5% raises.
Yeah, because the new revenue estimate for the state increases, the projection was for $58 million, if I have that correct, which is the exact amount needed for the 5% increase. Right. So what's being voiced as problematic about that as a solution?
Well, for one, yeah, like you said, it's not exactly 58 million. But yeah, the new revenue estimates are just so close to the requested number that some people think he's just pulling these revenue numbers out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
But also some of the reasoning he gave for the $58 million aren't holding a ton of water with people. I mean, some of the examples he gave were the president's tax reform package, which was actually already budgeted for, according to the executive summary of this budget he presented to the legislature in January. The legislature is also working on passing a sports betting bill that would legalize sports betting in West Virginia, but that law is contingent upon a Supreme Court ruling. But that said, it's still being presented as evidence for this new revenue estimate, this new revenue figure. And then there's some road bond construction plans that the state's working on. But in general, I think people are just suspect. And, you know, we're a balanced budget state. We cannot run at a deficit. So people are worried that if we just pass this bill for a 5% raise based on $58 million in increased estimates that may or may not come, it could lead to spending cuts sometime in the middle of the year.
I'm D.W. Gibson, and I'm speaking with journalists Jake Zuckerman and Sarah Jones about the West Virginia teacher strike. Today on Fresh Air, writer Luis Alberto Urrea, the son of a Mexican father and American mother. He says he grew up with a border wall in his family's home. That's today at 2 on 93.9 FM. We'll be right back after a break. I'm D.W. Gibson, speaking with Jake Zuckerman and Sarah Jones about the West Virginia teacher strike. So, Sarah, the Republicans, are they really trying to turn public opinion against the teachers, and is it working?
That is what I've heard from Democrats and from teachers. They feel like the goal is to eventually turn public sentiment against teachers as the strike continues to go on and parents start to worry, you know, is my kid going to go back to school? How are they going to prepare for their standardized tests? So the longer the strike goes on, the more I think that starts to become a risk.
Mm-hmm. And Jake, West Virginia has a recent history of cutting taxes, including Senator Carmichael's proposal to cut corporate taxes by another $140 million this year. How does this environment contribute to the dearth of funding for teachers' wages, especially in light of what you just reminded us that it's a balanced budget state?
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. There was a plan to cut the tax for, I believe it's in business industrial companies in the state. It was by about $140 million over 7 years. However, that plan has largely fizzled in light of this, but that really hasn't stopped a lot of Democrats from using that as a punching bag. You know, there's an optics problem here that we're trying to cut taxes for big companies and then telling teachers we can't afford to pay them more. And meanwhile, West Virginia teachers are paid 47th out of 50 states in the nation. So, you know, the bill has stalled, the actual pay raise bill, but I think there's a sentiment that the legislature is catering too much to business at the expense of its workers.
Right. And, you know, I have to ask, in an effort to find money to provide this raise in a balanced budget state, it's been documented in your reporting that the governor's coal company has, $1.6 million in back taxes owed. Has there been any serious line of questioning for that? Is it even a starting point for raising revenue?
No, the answer to that is generally no. You know, I believe it was NPR that broke the news in October that there were liens filed against a litany of Jim Justice's coal companies all around the country. He has mines and agriculture companies all over the place. Meanwhile, there are a series of lawsuits against him all over his companies for failing to pay out on contracted work. And it's just kind of the worst kept secret in the state. The governor's companies owe a lot of money. Over the past year in the different interviews, he's given somewhat veiled statements of saying, well, when companies are this large and tax rates so complex, it's natural that there's a sort of discord between the IRS and the companies, which may or may not be true. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's this irony underpinning the whole situation about how are we going to afford to pay these teachers when meanwhile the governor's companies owe millions to the state.
What are your thoughts on that, Sarah? Because I know you included that in your reporting as well, these back taxes. Does that comport what Jake said about sort of that sort of passing the ball back and forth between a corporation and the IRS and trying to square books, or does it seem like there might actually be some money there?
I'm actually not sure about that. I will say that it's definitely on the minds of everyone I've talked to so far, and it seems to be sort of adding to this public perception of the governor as this aloof figure who's AWOL and is corrupt, frankly, and isn't in touch with the needs of teachers and of other everyday people.
It seems to me like it could change the dynamics on the ground immediately if he were to offer that up, as a starting point. So how have other unions, Sarah, in West Virginia reacted to the strike?
They've been supportive. I have heard various things from teachers, and you know, one person told me that there was a perception that union leadership had been passive. I think they're in a difficult position. Where they're trying to secure the best deal possible for teachers. They're suddenly back on board with the strike now, and from everything I've heard, you know, they're united with the rank and file and it continuing indefinitely if they can't get 5%.
So in a right-to-work state, you know, how would you characterize the significance of having solidarity among other unions in the fight?
Oh, it's incredibly important. I've been talking to an organizer with United Electrical Workers, which represents some state workers, and that's something that he's talked about a lot, is this sense of solidarity, and how he hopes, too, it'll encourage more people to join a union, that it will show people, you know, this is what happens when you have a powerful union representing your interests. You have leverage.
Because that's one thing that stood out to me in your reporting. You really contextualize the current strike with the history of labor struggle in West Virginia and nationally. Maybe describe how this fight emulates aspects of the mine wars.
Right. So we've definitely heard a lot of talk of the mine wars in West Virginia, if people aren't familiar with that.
Tell us a little bit.
I will do my best. So West Virginia has a history of very militant organized labor, and the process of organizing with United Mine Workers in the state was a bloody one. So you had the Battle of Matewan, you had the Battle of Blair Mountain, where miners were literally shot at and bombed. And everyone I've talked to has brought that up and is in touch with that history. And, you know, you have seen teachers, and my own sources have been wearing the red bandanas, which this the striking miners war. It's where the term redneck actually comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about it, and they're talking about, you know, this is what my ancestors did. This is what my relatives actually did. And, you know, this is what I'm going to do now. And obviously, this is a peaceful protest. No mm-hmm. one's getting shot at. But it's definitely on people's minds, and it does seem to be inspiring them to action.
Mm-hmm. Jake, have you noticed a shift in tone on the part of the teachers since the start of the strike? Your articles describe what seemed to be a jubilantly defiant scene at the state capitol last Monday. Is that feeling persisting? How does it feel there now?
Right. Well, I got to say, you know, attendance from a lot of the teachers has kind of been waning over the last couple of days. However, just this morning, I was getting to work around 8:30 a.m. and saw a massive line stretching well outside the Capitol, wrapping around the Culture Center, which is essentially a satellite building. And just a few hours ago, we got an email saying that actually admittance to the Capitol had ended because of the massive population inside.
Hmm.
So I think people are fired up. You know, we haven't seen any sort of riotous behavior. We haven't seen any hostile behavior, but people are loud. You know, anytime on the Senate floor, these are big, thick, marble-walled buildings. There's thick wooden doors. There are two sets of them in the Senate. But anytime, I mean, you can just hear this constant roar from outside of somewhere in the market of 5,000 people chanting either, do your jobs, or jeering the Senate president. I mean, they are certainly making their voices heard.
Right. And do you have any sense that sort of coverage is increasing? Do you have any sense that even from neighboring states or regionally speaking or nationally speaking that there's media there or other outside sources that might sort of give them more energy to continue?
Yeah, well, we've been seeing some more media. I know we've seen CNN's here. I believe the New mm-hmm. Republic has been here. There have been some other sources, 538, I think I was talking to a reporter from them once, NBC has had people here. But yeah, I think that this national attention is really putting the whole thing in focus. Our servers have overloaded.
Hmm.
There's been no access to Wi-Fi at times when the bandwidth is just overloaded. So yeah, the national attention, it's definitely felt. Just Saturday in the Senate, when there was a full Senate chamber that was watching a live stream of a Senate Finance Committee meeting, which, when you think about it, when is the last time you've ever
right.
heard of so many people watching a legislative committee hearing?
Exactly.
But yeah, there's a tension, and these lawmakers, no eyes are upon them, whatever they do.
And Sarah, is there some way that Wisconsin, which has, you know, endured some labor issues of its own over the last several years, can be a cautionary tale for West Virginia?
Yeah, and there are obviously some parallels between the situations. And, you know, you had the big protests in the state capitol, and, you know, Scott Walker then went on to survive his recall effort, and Act 10 has been a disaster for the state's public education system. But I think that there are some important distinctions to draw out as well. The way I understand it from the figures that I've looked at anyway, is that you simply have a greater proportion of public employees in the state of West Virginia. And in a lot of these smaller counties, the public school is actually a major employer. And also just as an institution, it helps bring the community together. Like, it's very important in the community life. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think it's not quite the same.
And also, too, just a history of organizing as
yes.
well is probably in the blood of everyone.
Absolutely.
I've been speaking with Jake Zuckerman and Sarah Jones about the West Virginia teacher strike. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you, Jake.
Hey, thank you for having us on.
Thank you.